Time being 7 o'clock, I call to order the Franklin School Committee meeting. Meetings are recorded by Franklin TV and shown on Comcast Channel 9 and Verizon Channel 29, as well as recorded by Franklin Matters. Just a quick FYI, there's a little bit of issues with YouTube right now. But the meeting still are kind of being recorded and broadcast. And then the recording will be published and uploaded to YouTube later on. And at the conclusion of our meeting, we will be adjourning into executive session and will not be returning to open meeting. All right, now for our pledge students. Lucy, if you want to come on up. Franklin Middle School is proud to have Lucy Dan Duran lead the Pledge of Allegiance. Lucy exemplifies the spirit of our new community, thoughtful, inclusive, and quietly courageous. Her teachers share that she is always offering to help classmates, whether it's troubleshooting Chromebooks or answering a quick question. Might actually need you for that Chromebook later on. She is unfailingly kind and has even volunteered to sit with a student who finds the cafeteria overwhelming. A positive role model, Lucy gives her best effort, especially when work is challenging. Outside of school, Lucy stays busy with hockey, field hockey, and dance. When asked what she values about Franklin Middle, Lucy says, "I like Franklin Middle School because it's an environment where, if you don't feel safe, you always have an adult you can go to." We are honored to recognize Lucy and the example she sets for her peers. Can you all please rise? Thank you very much. Want to take off? Feel free to enjoy the rest of the night. As is customary, we'll pause for a moment of silence. All right, review of agenda. Agenda look okay to everybody?
Everything looks good.
Payment of bills taken care of. Payroll, Vice Chair McNeil.
Payroll in order.
All right, FHS student reps.
Yep, some news for the whole school. Picture day will be on the 28th and the 29th of October. The retake day is scheduled for December 10th. The freshman help class officer elections, Jake Sidwell is now the president, and Andrew Grasso is the vice president. On October 25th, the homecoming dance is on. Students should check in at 6:30 in the FHS gym entrance. Ticket sales are also open on Unibank. And students will be unable to leave the dance until 9 p.m., but they can get there at like 6:30. Until 7th, but they can't get in after 7th. And the dance theme is Festival of Lights. There's also a trip to France and the United Kingdom, which is being planned for the summer of next year. And if you're interested, you can sign up on the FHS newsletter. At 6:30 on November 5th, there will be a chamber concert in the auditorium. And AP exam payment portal is also open today, so students should sign up so they can take the exams in May. For sports, girls soccer has a home game tomorrow against Sharon. Boys soccer beat Kent 4-2. There's a volleyball game, I'm pretty sure, going on right now, with senior night, if I'm correct. Volleyball also just won against KP 3-2. Football won on Friday 21-20 against Taunton. And they have a game this Friday at Alvo. The homecoming football game is on October 24th against Bishop Vian. As for the senior class, there's a senior project meeting in the auditorium after school on Thursday. And for the juniors, this upcoming Saturday, PSATs are being held at the high school. There will be no makeup date, so you have to be sure to get there on time.
All right. Thank you very much. Any kind of questions, comments from the committee?
You good?
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. Have a good night.
You too.
Good.
All right.
Good evening, everyone. I have three announcements. First, there's a half day for students for professional learning for our staff tomorrow, Wednesday, October 15th. Across the district, educators will engage professional learning aligned with strategic initiative number 3, aligning instructional practices. Educators will spend time analyzing a variety of data, planning with colleagues, and sharing best practices. Next, with regard to budget preparations, as we begin to work on the FY 27 budget, our focus remains on aligning resources with district priorities, sustaining high-quality opportunities for all students. We continue to navigate the financial pressures that follow the end of one-time funds. At the same time, rising costs in areas such as health insurance, special education tuition, contractual obligations are expected to create some funding gaps. To address these challenges, we'll continue to work using our zero-based budgeting process and approach this year. Through the zero-based budgeting process, every expenditure is carefully reviewed to ensure transparency, accountability, and alignment with the student success across the district. This means that each department and school will build their budgets from the ground up, identify essential needs, look for areas of redundancy, and ensure that resources that directly support students are in place and prioritized. To facilitate this process, Ms. Velotti has created budget workbooks similar to what she created last year for each of the schools and department cost centers. She will meet individually with principals and cost center administrators to review the books for clarity on expectations and how to utilize them. This is the same model that Ms. Velotti had instituted last year with all the change in how we reorg all the schools. But it will be an opportunity to kind of have an intro meeting, work through, clarify anything, and then we'll continue through our process where we all come together as meet as teams. So that work, I know that I've been CC'd on emails where those workbooks have been shared, and ultimately, through some careful planning and collaboration, we'll continue to manage our finances responsibly while also keeping our focus where it belongs, which is ultimately in the service of our students in our schools, and continue the implementation of our pre-K through 8 reorganization, which we have been prepping for, we're currently implementing, but need to continue to work to support as we notice things where there are needs throughout the district. And we'll continue to do that. We'll continue to update you on that process and provide more information in future presentations to kind of walk through what that will look like. But we wanted to let you know that preparations and some of the background work that we usually reference in the winter has already begun this year. Finally, the instructional leadership team meetings have started. So we recently launched our instructional leadership team school visits, the ILT, and where district administrators join school-based leadership teams to visit classrooms, see teaching and learning in action. We've been into so many incredible spaces and classrooms and seen some amazing interactions to start the school year as students and teachers are really working really hard. They're engaged, students are engaging with one another. Teachers are welcoming their students, creating environments where you want your kids to be in Franklin Public Schools. So we appreciate all the educators who've opened their doors to us, and we look forward to continuing this process throughout the year. We have our final school tomorrow, and we will have completed our first round of walkthroughs as we continue, and they've been really, really positive and an opportunity for us to see. And I think this is really exciting for us where we swung into such an operational standpoint for many, many months to be able to get in to see teaching and learning and see the great work that our educators are doing with kids is really why we took these roles. So it was exciting. And that concludes my report. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions or comments?
We can forward put those books.
Thank you.
I just want to say commend Jana, because I know that this is something that we were pretty excited to implement. So good job for bringing that, because we need our finances to be easily understood by the public. It's helpful, so thanks.
No questions, but thank you for the update, and thank you for just your proactive and thoughtful leadership when it comes to the budgeting process for the coming year.
Yep, just to echo my colleagues, thank you for starting the budget as soon as we are talking about it now. It feels like we just got through budget season. So I think the sooner we can start talking about it, the more the families understand the impacts and what this means for their students and also how they can help contribute. So thank you for being proactive.
Echo what everybody else, you know, the fact that we're having these conversations right now, middle of October, talking about next year's budget is fantastic. And maybe for folks who, at home, kind of listening in, and especially I know, the school budget is always such a big talking point. One this is a perfect opportunity to now jump on board and start paying attention for a lot of the discussion that's going to continue to happen really in the springtime of next year as we kind of move forward. And the other thing too, just to really kind of elaborate, like a zero-based budget, I mean, that's from the ground up, and then kind of building your systems and putting the price tags on that. That's not just kind of copying and pasting what you had from 1 year, moving forward with a couple of tweaks here or there. It's incredibly thoughtful, detailed, and what my grad school professor would say, the worst, most difficult and time-consuming type of a budget to make. And so the fact that you guys are taking this head on is absolutely fantastic, because it really is one of the best ways to actually kind of go and make sure that every single dollar is being spent with the most utility and the most effectiveness as possible. So really, for folks at home, please continue to kind of stay engaged right now, you know, because springtime and that whole, the budget hearings and all that fun stuff will be here before we know it, but the conversations are already happening. And Superintendent, I also just want to, a quick shout out. KP and I had the opportunity to visit one of the schools last week and see how lunch was kind of being served. We had heard from some families about kind of questioning about that, and it was absolutely fantastic. It was like a NASCAR pit crew. We had Aaron, Collins number two, had timed it from the moment that kids kind of walked into the cafeteria until every single one had a tray and was seated at the table. And it was incredibly well run. It was a great experience. I got a free meal out of it, and it was terrific. The company as well was wonderful. We got to sit with a number of kiddos. This is down in Washington. It was really fun. It actually happened to be a kiddo from each of, we had, it was a Parmenter, there was an Oak, and there was a Kennedy that was actually at the building. But just real great, wanted to kind of commend your team for what you guys are doing over there. And I would love if food services be able to kind of come on down and present at the future school committee meeting. They're doing some fantastic work. And there's a lot of, Colin was kind of nerding out with the way that he kind of puts all the lunches together to really kind of maximize the value for the kiddos. And it was terrific work. So I wanted to thank you guys as well for that opportunity.
We did not connect on that, so I appreciate you sharing it publicly. I'm glad it was positive. That's great. I'm glad to hear it.
I just wanted to react to that. You know, we had a free lunch along with the fresh fruit as well.
Oh, they're good.
All right, excellent. Thank you very much. Do guest presentations.
Okay, so we have two presentations tonight. You'll notice in your packet. The first I have is two of our administrators, our principal of our high school, Dr. Maria Weber, and I have our principal of our Franklin Middle School, Mr. Craig Williams, who will come up and give a brief update on clubs. We felt like it's that time of year where there are some questions, and they will speak to their process, where they're at, and then open it up to any questions. And like I said, I told them to not over-prepare, but just come and prepare what you had available, so I know that you've done that. And then after that, we'll move into the food pantry presentation as well, and we'll introduce them at that time. Thank you.
Hey, good evening. Marie Weber again, principal of high school.
Craig Williams, principal of Franklin Middle School.
So we wanted to give you an update of where we are in terms of getting clubs up and running at the high school. So here we just, I outlined the process for you all. We started with the list that's currently part of our MOU and our contract. So clubs that have historically been offered and clubs that we are able to offer through that. And we sent out a list to the entire staff to solicit interest. So first we have to start with getting people interested in advising these clubs. So staff who expressed interest were selected as advisors, and then we actually hunted down a few people too to get certain clubs up and running that we really wanted to make sure we had a representation for. And so then, once we've had the club advisors established, they will run based on student interest. So sufficient interest is determined by having consistently active members, and those members will pay the activity fee. And so in order to generate student interest, we had a nice club fair. It was awesome. It was really a highlight, and there's some pictures on our website too if anybody wants to check them out. But we had over 35 clubs represented, so we had students set up tables with poster boards. They were advertising their club and their club missions and sort of explaining to kids grade 9 through 12 what the club, its purpose is. And so they had like sheets where kids could write down if they were interested in joining and connect them to the advisors. And so since then, some clubs have began meeting and they've advertised when they're going to meet and where they're going to meet. And so we're really trying to generate student interest that way. And so we're gonna see how this goes for the next month, and we expect that the payments will be in by November 1st. Then we'll give it a couple of weeks of reminders, but then by the November 15th, we need to determine which clubs are going to run or not, based again on student interest and student payment. But the bright side of all this is there are several clubs. We have lots of students who are proposing new clubs, and we just don't have room for them given our current budget restrictions. So if certain clubs that don't have students as interested as perhaps they used to be, then we have an opportunity for some students to propose new clubs. And then we'll have a process for determining, again, which of those we can put out to students and the staff to be advisors, and we'll go from there. So currently, after all of that, is there a next slide? Click. Thank you. Okay. So these, you can see this is the list. It really encompasses a range of student interests, I think. And these are the clubs that we are offering students as of today. And right now, these club advisors are in the process of just meeting with kids and collecting payments, and hopefully they will run after the 15th. And again, if not, we'll have room for some new club proposals. And that's where we stand for the high school.
All right, so Dr. Weber is describing something that Franklin Middle School, we're striving to get to eventually, but as you all know, we're at a place where we're rebuilding or building really from the ground up with our clubs. So we're striving to do a similar process. We sent out a club interest survey to indicate which clubs staff were able to advise. And then so we're in the process right now having some conversations with staff members, as Dr. Weber said, maybe hunting a few down to finalize the club offerings based on staff ability and also wanting to try to have a diversity of clubs and a range of club opportunities with the budget that we do have. Our plan is for next week, we'll be sending out a student interest survey that will be shared with all students to gauge participation and enthusiasm for the proposed clubs, with then really a hope to see if we can get those clubs started either the week of October 27th or the week of November 3rd. And then we'll be looking to, again, kind of in a very similar way to what the high school is doing, allowing a period of time in which students can try out clubs, but then expecting that we're setting it as of now a December 1st student activity fee deadline. And then if we can or need to make adjustments, we will. We're really at the middle level. One of the real strengths of the middle level for so long were the club offerings. And over the past few years, they have not been in existence. There were limited clubs last year after the year previous in which there were none. So. We really want to try to get these off the ground, but at the same token, we have to balance the bandwidth of all the adults in the building who are in a significant transition. So that's where we are with clubs at Franklin Mills.
All right. Any questions or comments from anybody?
I think just one question for me. What is the cost of the student activity fee? Does that vary by club based on what they're trying to participate in? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I can speak to the high school clubs. The fee is consistent for across grades. It's $128 this year. However, what's different this year, some of the high school clubs have additional costs associated with them that students now participating will have to pay. So in previous years, they may not have. So in previous years, we were able to include things like transportation, to events like academic decathlon and things like that. And now if a student chooses to be part of that club, for example, they'll pay the activity fee, but they'll also have to pay for like competition fees, transportation, things like that. So there are, there can be additional fees for some clubs, depending on what they do.
If I could just chime in too, the club fee is $128 and it covers all of the clubs. So it's one collection, you don't pay per club. You pay for the year and then you can access multiple clubs within that year.
That's a good point.
And that's the same at the middle level as well.
Yeah.
The middle, yeah, that was my next question. Perfect, that's all, thank you.
Do we know roughly how many clubs that have previously run at the high school level are expected to run this year?
So of the ones, we actually have a lot running this year. There were only 7 clubs this year that aren't running because there was no advisor who would advise them. And there also really hasn't been students knocking down our doors begging for them either. So these are clubs that have sporadically run in the past, and like the student interest sort of ebbs and flows. So there are 7 this year that currently don't have a club advisor that have run, I would say, inconsistently over the past couple of years.
And then looking at the timelines for any of the late-breaking clubs, you know, like if any clubs don't end up running, it seems like things get a little tight. How quickly are we able to really turn that around to make sure that those students, you know, just because they have a club that is able to run because other clubs didn't, they don't lose another month or another month and a half. What's the process to get that all taken care of quickly? You know, going through looking for advisors, looking for, you know, all the students getting the interest out again, you know, without the student there to kind of bring everyone in with the clubs. It seems like that might be a little bit harder. So do we have kind of a concentrated effort to make sure that those run quickly?
So we've already begun meetings with a lot of the kids who've expressed an interest in proposing a club, and kind of told them that they're on hold. But we do have a formal form where students will submit sort of like the mission of their club, the frequency of their expected meetings, to name the persons that they have already spoken with who will advise the club, and then we hope to have a quick turnaround. And in terms of advertising, we're not going to have a second club fair. However, we have really good means of advertising within our building through like Panther Book, our TV screens, morning announcements, the student newsletter, the website. So I'm pretty confident that students can get the word out of the new clubs. Again, these are tentative. We don't know how many will potentially, could be just 2, could be 3, could be none. We'll know after. But we already have sort of those background steps in motion. So after the 15th, we can hopefully get those underway and running in December.
Thank you. So I guess one question I have is regarding transportation. Has that been determined if we're going to have late buses at all available?
Yes, we are. Yes. I'm sure Jonna might have more details than I heard.
Yes, we will have, we have confirmed buses for the high school. We are waiting on the bus company to confirm the middle school, but it is very likely that the middle school will also get a bus. I can have an update with you once I hear back from them by the end of the week.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. Yeah, I think that's great. I know that's been what we've heard in years past, that it's prohibited participation. But is the availability of the bus as a result of having less places to go to, is that driving the ease or is it unrelated?
I believe that partially is the reason. I believe they have 2 available buses that might not do run in other towns, and they might be able to do the middle school run, the late buses.
Okay, great, thank you. So this is one thing. I think while we're still in the beginnings of redistricting, I think we should always look for the silver linings of, you know, what things are we able to get because of this. And I mean, have you been in 3 different locations, it's probably probably cost a lot more. So so I think this is a win for the kids. Hopefully allows them to help establish this communities better than if they had not had these clubs. I know we don't have the answer now, but what would be really interesting to find out is, after these clubs are established, what does the duration of these trips look like? Now it's one bus going 4 hours, so I'd be curious to find out. Thank you.
Thank you both for, both to you and your team for the work that you're doing with on the clubs and really providing for some well-rounded experience for our students here at Franklin, particularly at the middle level with in the first year of the newly designed district. And it's so important to have this these opportunities for community building, for students to get to know each other and so find a place where they can fit in and have some time for extracurriculars, but also just create the well-rounded experience and to come together. So it's so important. Thank you. And again, and your team for all this hard work for this update. Really appreciate it.
The only thing I would ask, it looks like I have to do this because it's like these are the people in my ears constantly. I know that there was discussions about symphony specifically. It looks like string orchestra, is that listed? Because I know the strings is through lifelong learning, so to me, I know they wanted to keep it as an academic, but if we can even keep it as a club. The big drop, what I heard from the parents, I don't play, so what I heard was, when we don't bring the winds and the strings together, it eliminates 80% of the music catalog available. So if you're only a string orchestra, you really have very limited pieces that you can play. So it changes the trajectory of majoring in music and getting into certain schools. So they wanted me to give that a plug. But I'm sure you're gonna hear from music teachers without me being the liaison, so. This is exciting to hear. Like to Al's point, yeah, they put it back. I know it's a lot on you guys trying to figure it all out, even outside of school now, so appreciate it.
Thank you both. Could you please go back to the club services slide?
Sure.
From the school committee perspective, can we suggest any clubs?
I'm sorry, can you repeat
that? Can we advise any clubs to move on? Like artificial intelligence, like that kind of clubs, can we suggest?
So I can just speak broadly as the district. If students are expressing interest in a club and there's an employee, Franklin Public Schools teacher, staff member who's willing to run it, and that was a club that they wanted, it could end up in a situation where Dr. Weber's form, where it's like we're looking for an AI club, if this is the teacher that's willing to do it, it would be considered as part of that process. But outside of that, the club would need to be run by a staff member that works within the schools. So.
Yeah, one of these days, we send you one at least a couple of names like the present starting 2025, the artificial intelligence is booming like now. We need to update that for school district students as well.
Right. Sure.
Yeah, thank you very much for this. It's fantastic to kind of see this grow, especially I know for the 4 years that the three of us have kind of been on the committee, kind of where clubs, especially at the middle school level, weren't at that time to where they're growing is just fantastic. So thank you so much for all the work that's gone into this. And when it comes to transportation with that late bus, and this might be maybe early to ask this question, but what might the cost be for the students and the families to kind of?
The cost to students to get on the late bus?
Yes. Is it just going to be there, or is it going to be an added fee that we'll have to?
We don't usually charge them for the late bus. I don't know, at the high school level.
If they have a bus pass,
they wouldn't be
we've
charged.
Allowed them to ride the bus on a different run if it's connected to an after school. I can think of in the past, years ago, we would charge $1 for the late bus if you were not a bus rider but needed a ride home. We have not discussed that in any way. That is a thought, but we haven't gone there because the focus has been on getting the clubs, and we wanted to see if we have commitment on the buses. But we have had a model like that in Franklin a few years ago where it was $1 a ride. If you did not already have a pass, you had a bus pass, you presented, and that's considered what your family paid for you to get home to and from school. That's how we've this unit.
So really just, yeah, trying to eliminate as many barriers as possible for kids to utilize these clubs, to kind of be able to go and to make this, which is great. And then I talked about, you spoke a lot about the clubs really kind of being contingent on student interest. And so just for folks at home, has that always been the case? Is that what other school districts do, or is that more just because of financial barriers that we have?
I would say it's partly due to financial barriers, because in the past we've had clubs run at very small numbers, and they've just, like, for instance, a club like a book club might only generate 5 or 6 students that come consistently. And so now we're in a position to say, should this club continue or not, because it only has that many students in it. So, but keeping that in mind, we're trying to get very creative. So I can already think of, like, we have the chess club and the Dungeons and Dragons club, and I've already had a conversation with that advisor, and we talked about, well, if we only get a few students in chess and a few students in Dungeons and Dragons, would you be willing to take on both with just one stipend and just have both groups in the same space? And that advisor, that teacher is willing, so that's good. So we're trying to get creative so we can make this as inclusive as possible for as many kids who want to. But at the same time, we have to make some tough decisions too. Yeah.
Thank you very much, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right.
So thank you for outlining the process. I think we are aware, and I know that this is also communicated through parent newsletters. If you're a parent who's interested to learn more, you can expect to see more information available on, if it's not online, it's definitely, I've seen it put out in newsletters and whatnot. So we'll continue to work directly from here with the community, the school communities themselves, and work through that process. But thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's really great to see. This is another example too of Dr. Weber and Mr. Wade working closely and aligning to have some consistency. When we think about the student and family experience, I think where they can be aligned, they've really worked to do that, and where they need to be different, they've honored that too. So I want to credit both of them. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Thank you. Okay. So next up, we have our valued partners, the Franklin Food Pantry, here. We're joined by Tina Parterly and Lauren Doherty, who will share some information. Were you here last year, Tina?
I don't think so.
This might be a two-year gap. Okay. Well, we're excited to have Food Pantry here. They've been great partners, and they've obviously been great for our community in so many ways that they'll speak to. So I will not steal your thunder and kick it right over to you to present. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us. I'm going to run slides, and Laura is going to do most of the presentation.
All right. Thank you for having us. Last year, 1,900 people accessed the pantry. That is 500 more people than the total enrollment at Franklin High School. I just want you to think about that for a minute. Think about the kids in the entire high school. 500 more than that number came to the pantry. And those folks who come to the pantry, they're our neighbors, they're our colleagues, they're our aunts and uncles and parents, and their families with young children who are in the Franklin Public Schools. Food insecurity is something that I think many folks perhaps in our community don't believe it exists to this extent, but it does. When clients come to the food pantry, they shop as if they're in a market. And David was there recently. We invite all of you to come and get in touch with us at any point to see the type of experience that folks are having when they come to the pantry. We offer clients fresh produce, dairy, milk, eggs, and cheese are always available. We've made that commitment to folks. We always have proteins. And as you can see in the picture above, we always have a large variety of breads and bakery items available for folks. The primary way that people access food at the pantry is to come and shop in person. But for a lot of people, if you can't do that, there are many other ways that you can access the pantry. If you are a family with two income earners and you have a job and you can't get to the pantry during the day, then you can come Tuesday night. We call it curbside. And essentially, you drive through and you shop as if you were in the pantry. We bring coolers of, again, eggs, milk, cheese, all the proteins that you'd be able to choose if you were inside, outside to the curb. You don't get out of your car and you drive through and you're able to access that. If you don't have transportation and you can't get to the pantry, we have four mobile pantries that we offer out in the community. Again, we set these up as mini pantries, bringing those same fresh items, and also partner with the YMCA, who brings non-perishable items. So we do this as a senior center. We also go to Glen Meadow Community, Central Park Terrace, and just recently in September, we started the fourth mobile pantry at Gatehouse Lane down on 140. If you can't leave your home, you can get food that way also. We'll deliver food to you. We call you every week and check to see how you're doing, tell you what's available that week, pack those bags, and then that's delivered to your home. So there's several ways that you can access food through the pantry. It doesn't mean you have to come in and shop. With all of those programs, one of the things that maybe you're thinking is, oh my gosh, how on earth does all of that take place in a week? And the way that it takes place is because of all of our partners and our volunteers. We have innumerable partners, some of whom we'll talk a little bit about, who enable us to do all of that work. And we also have hundreds of volunteers. It takes 125 volunteers every week to keep these programs running. So we could not do this without our volunteers. You can see on these graphs, the need is rising. And this last year, the amount of food that was distributed equals 67,000 bags of groceries. So that need continues to grow. To the right, you can see we're talking about the Weekend Backpack Program. You may be familiar with the Weekend Backpack Program. It is facilitated through the school nurses. And essentially, families come to the school nurses, the nurses go to the families who may not be able to have food for the weekend for their children. And so we pack up that number of bags, deliver them to the schools every week, and those get put in the children's backpacks when they're headed home for the weekend. That program started as a pilot in 2018 at the Parmenter School with 10 bags a week. Last year, we were up to 125 bags a week, and they're distributed through every Franklin Public School. However, we know that we're not reaching nearly as many kids who really could utilize that food on the weekend. So one of our goals is to grow the program in partnership with the schools, making sure that we get the word out about the program, that families feel comfortable participating in the program and don't feel any stigma about utilizing the Weekend Backpack Program. An interesting fact that we've been working on with Colin is that, you know, we have a number of kids in middle school who participate in this program, and then in high school, it's like they all disappear. There's nobody at the high school who participates in this program. So we've been looking at some different ways to try to reach the kids there to be able to utilize that particular program. How we're meeting community needs. We're talking a little bit about food partnerships, but I want to step back for a minute and let you know that 59% of the food that the pantry distributes is purchased. The rest of that food we get through food recovery partners. A food recovery partner is somebody who goes out to the supermarkets and recovers food that would be thrown away because they want to take it off the shelves to make room for new products, or it's going to expire in the next couple of days. So those recovery partners bring us thousands of pounds of food that, instead of being in the trash, end up in the hands of folks who need that food and are going to eat that healthy, nutritious food. So we look at partnerships with that, and this is a good time to mention Colin and Aaron again, because what they do is, when they've got leftover food that they're not going to be able to repurpose, and they are great at repurposing, they give it to us. So a good example of that is a few weeks ago, when school was starting, there was a large amount of cut fruit that was available that wasn't eaten, had another probably 2 days that it was going to be good to distribute. And Aaron packaged it all up in to-go containers, brought it to the pantry. We offered it to our clients, and they were thrilled. It was fresh, healthy food, and again, it's keeping it out of the landfill, and it's giving it to folks who need it. So some of those partnerships that we'll talk a little bit more about really help us achieve our mission. So other things, just some things that we've done recently that are very exciting. The Tuesday curbside that I talked about, the drive up, we have closed all of our programs to surrounding towns about 2 years ago. And that was primarily because the need was growing so quickly that we could not continue to accept new clients from areas outside of Franklin. And you may or may not know that the surrounding towns, those pantries are open an hour and a half, 2 hours a week, 1 day a week, usually during the week when folks are at work. And so it's very difficult for people in those communities to access food. We recently realized that, I shouldn't say realized, we strategically planned that we had the capacity to open up curbside to folks in those neighboring towns who are having challenges accessing food. So that's been really exciting for us. You'll hear us talk a lot about transportation. We've got a great partnership with the Senior Center, and the Senior Center van is used to bring clients to the pantry. That is really a huge area for us as we partner with Fish and Gatra, because there are a lot of folks who don't have their own transportation to get to the pantry. We focus a lot on referral and support systems. So for example, folks who come to the pantry may have other needs from a housing perspective or a health perspective, or they need some assistance in signing up for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and we're able to do all of those kinds of things with them. We'll talk a little bit the next slide about education and advocacy, which is an area that we're also expanding and focusing on. So speaking of education, we've done some really fun and exciting things with Franklin Public Schools, and you can read the list, but nothing will ever be able to express how fun it is to go to Oak Street School, bring the pantry truck, see all the kids in the second grade who made these beautiful birthday boxes, basically a shoebox that they decorated, made a handwritten card, put in cake mix and icing and candles, and then bring it up to the pantry truck and load it in there. And then after that, I get the great joy of going into the classroom and showing them a presentation, which hopefully what they leave with is, it's okay to ask for help. That's what the pantry is for. We want you to ask for help, and there's nothing to be ashamed of or embarrassed about. And the questions they have are phenomenal. And last year, the second grade class was then in third grade, and they all walked to the pantry, all, I think it was 60 or 70 of them, with their teachers, came in bringing an item that they had collected, and got a tour of the pantry and weighed the items that they had given us. So there is nothing more incredible than seeing, you all work with them, so you see it a lot, seeing these children come in with those wide eyes and open minds, and really not be ashamed, afraid of walking into a food pantry. So that's really exciting. And we know that this is a year with great transition, and we look forward to doing a lot more of that in the classroom. So it's a lot of fun. But our goal is to, in addition to getting food to folks who are looking to access the pantry, it's to make sure that they feel welcome and that there is nothing to be ashamed or embarrassed about in coming and asking for help. How can we partner? We're already doing a lot of it. I talked about Colin, I talked about the classrooms. We have Empty Bowls, which is a huge program for the pantry. We're looking forward to doing that again this year. We have the Pantry Elves, which is a community service program that we'll be rolling out. And that's essentially what started years ago, is having middle and high school students collect food during the holidays and bring it to the pantry. It's now moved on to be more of an online program where they're raising funds and spreading awareness about the pantry. That's going to be coming soon. Teams and clubs are always doing food drives for us and also coming in for tours and to learn more about what the pantry does. Field trips to the pantry. Oh, we love when the kids come to the pantry. So there's a lot of great things that we can do, and many that we are doing. And one of the things that I'd like to close with is we want to do more, and we want to have teachers and educators and these kids look at the pantry as a place that is a welcome resource for them. And ideas that you guys have at any time about how we can do that, we would love to hear more about that. So thank you.
Thank you so much for coming and for this presentation, especially for all the work that you do for this community. It's fantastic. And real quick, Chris, while I'm talking, can we zoom in on that? This great sign, you guys?
Oh, great. Thank you.
People see my face plenty of times. Show them something else. Well, we're jumping over to there. Yeah, I had the opportunity to be invited in and to tour the Franklin Food Pantry, and it was the first time being there since everyone's kind of closed down, and it was a marvelous, incredible place you have over there with so many great volunteers. I got to see a great friend, Diana,
that's
over
right,
there,
yeah.
And so just thank you very much for the opportunity to kind of come in there and to see all the work that you're doing, and then for coming over here, back here to the school committee, to our meeting, just to kind of present it out. There was a couple of things I'd love to touch base on real quick. I know when we had spoken, there was kind of talk about Stop and Shop offering a grant program where if we can kind of provide a mini pantry within the schools, perhaps like the high school, that they would be able to kind of fund that. Would you be able to elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. The Stop and Shop Foundation has a focus on school pantries. And so what we talked about is the opportunity to find a space within the high school where we could set up shelving, and it would be non-perishable items, a place where kids could come in and access that food. So that's something that we would love to explore further. The thought was that if high school students are not accessing the weekend backpack program, that this could be a more discreet type of program that would work better for them.
And I know, and I had mentioned that, Colin had wrote back as well, hopefully in like the school wellness, you know, we might be able to kind of talk about that as years go on. I know there's a lot on the school slate right now.
No, but this is important work, and what I appreciate about the food pantry, particularly T and Laura, they come with suggestions, but they have solutions, and they're really solid planners, and I think they, when they put forth an idea, I think they have thought through, well, what's the support behind that? Because I think sometimes when we get ideas, it's a matter of how do we implement them with fidelity, and how do we make that happen? What resources do they need? How much time? So I think when I say this confidently with them in mind, that I think we're open to anything we can do to try to help provide access to food for kids, especially today. And Colin, I know, has already replied. He's interested in this work. He's food service director too. He's not just operations. So he's excited whenever we get to talk about food, because that was his original role. So I think there's tremendous possibility there. I think we just have to get in the same room and look at what could happen, bring Dr. Weber in and try to figure that out.
Okay, wonderful. And something else too, we had talked about, and I was glad we actually had the conversation about the late bus kind of being developed. And I don't know if there is a possibility of incorporating the Franklin Food Pantry as a stop on the late bus, or just to be able to try to really kind of encourage and drive more traffic, especially at the high school level. I know we spoke a lot about that stigma and about that kind of that drop off at the high school. So just as we kind of continue to explore the late bus and everything else, if that might be something that'd be wonderful. If that's something that might work with you.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much. Now we'll start down on this side.
I'm highly experienced with food pantries, how this works out. Two times of residential awards, so I have more experience with the food pantries. I really salute for all the volunteers out there for the food pantry. And congratulations, Tina, for the recent award from the state of Massachusetts. Today I learned new things, that curbside pickup. Today I learned new things today. Say the same thing to the community as well. That's all. Thank you. Great job sharing.
Thank you.
I was poking around on your website a little bit too. I think it's important that people know that people aren't showing up with proof of income. It's not that kind of organization. So it's good to know. I'm glad you're partnering with Empty Bowls. I know it was like everybody was very concerned what will happen now that Brennan's moved on. But I did bump into Ms. Cates over at the high school, and she was like, I'm gonna do it, but I don't know if I'm gonna do this thing. Like, she was really nervous, so thanks for supporting her, because I think she's capable, and like there's a good group of kids that has been sustaining that group too, so one of the best helps that we have. And then I just was thinking the middle to high school, because I'm sure that's a thing, which stinks. So an idea, if we sort of were able to communicate with the families prior to them moving to the high school, and maybe the system changes for them where, I don't want to overextend anybody from the high school, but I'm sure if we sought volunteers that maybe once you go to high school, we drop it off on Friday after by your house or something, like, I don't know, then maybe they would continue. But thank you for all you do, and congrats.
Can I respond? Yeah, just because you mentioned Empty Bowls, so this is a great time to put a plug in. Robin is amazing, and you've definitely got her back, and it's going to be great. But Empty Bowls is a high school-based club that the high schoolers participate in all year. But keep an eye out as community members, because we have community events. They're called Open Studios, and there are two at the high school, and we're taking this opportunity to sort of reimagine a couple of different events that could occur that would expand Empty Bowls and make it even more accessible to folks in our community. So those are usually in the wintertime. You would sign up and go to the high school hopefully twice, two different events, but there might be additional events where the concept of Empty Bowls is to remind us all that somewhere someone's bowl is empty, and so the act of making a bowl is sort of integral to the Empty Bowls club, which is why it ends up being an arts class. But thank you, we're thrilled. We met with Lucas very early on to express our support, to try to do whatever we could to keep the club going, so that's fantastic. And just on the high school piece, Laura talked about this, but it is very true that folks who shop at our pantry are truly all of us. And when we're out speaking, we're often looking into the audience and seeing folks that we know. And it has happened to us where we have had a group of youth in, whether it's someone from an elementary school or a club team or a civic group, and then they walk through our doors weeks later. And the best feeling in the world is when they walk through the door and say, oh my gosh, I'm so glad to see you, or I know you, or you came to my X, Y, or Z, because it means we've broken down that stigma. So it does get harder as they get older, so we're open to any possible conversations about that, but that's really our goal, because we know those folks are out there and there's nothing more we want than to have them come through our doors. Thank you.
Well, first off, thank you for this presentation. It's great information to see all that you're doing at the Franklin Food Pantry, and just all the work, all the services that you're providing to serve our neighbors in need. So thank you for that work. And I've been to the Open Bowls night in the past, and it's great to see that partnership between you and the high school students that run that club, and also the support from the community. It's great to see everyone coming together and supporting this great cause and providing for that. And like I said, great to see all these different partnership opportunities that we in the Franklin Public Schools have with you, and now we'd love to explore ways that we could partner more. I think it'd be great if there'd be some way that we can encourage high school students to volunteer with you guys. Maybe there's a way that we could provide course credit for that or something like that. So ways to just think creatively about that, and thank you for showing up here and getting the word out to the community. Both people need your services, but also if people want to volunteer and give back. So thank you for the work you do. Thank you for this presentation, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So thank you for this. I think it's great just to drive the awareness around what you all do and who you support. What was really telling to me, or Jim, that really stood out was the slide with the need is rising. Just looking at it from FY22, where you were under 30,000 pounds of food distributed to last year, where it's over 600. The increase is stark, and it just shows that really that there is that need, and the food insecurity is not, it's up there. It's out in our community, and you all do great work to help support that. When I was looking at this, though, you said FY, what is your fiscal year exactly?
Starts July 1st.
Okay. So it aligns with the fiscal year.
Yep.
Perfect. And then just looking at the increase in the weekend backpack program, also doubling from start to wherever it's at now. So definitely a need, and there's probably folks that are not aware of what you do, so they should come in here to talk about that. I think thinking back to my first interaction with the food pantry was with what PCCs do, with the drives that they're trying to raise money for the garden, not money, food, to see how much weight that they can gain and really how much they can give back. But I also thought back to my son's third grade teacher, Mr. Kelly.
Kelly.
And where he had done that, the breakfast, but not the breakfast, the birthday box.
Yeah, he was the one who started it.
Yeah, and my son, he was so excited, and just the whole thought of, it's very sad if it's your birthday and you can't even have a cake, and how happy my son was to go and pick out the stuff from the grocery store and get that box for somebody. So I really appreciate the partnership that the schools have with you and how it just helps drive kids to think beyond themselves, as an adult, it's like, wasn't thinking, oh yeah, birthday cake on your birthday, you not have that ability, so great, great partnership there.
We have a story of a family who came through the Tuesday curbside pickup, and the birthday boxes were out, and she said, that's the one I made, and so the volunteer said, oh, would you like it? And she said, no, I want to make sure somebody else gets that. And so yes, it's just incredible the impact that it has on children and adults, all of us,
Yeah,
that's a really joyful project.
Exactly. I mean, it just really embodies the whole portrait of the grant in terms of what we want our kids to be and how they want to give back and help. So Thank you for helping support that and partnering with these to drive that avenue. I know in our monthly newsletter we do have a section about the food pantry. We've talked about empty bowls before and kind of drive awareness. If there's any other events from a community perspective that you want us to help drive some awareness to, definitely let us know as well. We can make sure that the public knows and just kind of get it into a different avenue that folks may not see and be aware of. So.
Great.
But thank you for all that you do.
Thank you.
I was pretty shocked, especially in the opening of this presentation, at just how unwilling you all are to accept that it's hard to get food into people's hands. You know, I think it's very easy for the community, and then people who just haven't necessarily been around and seen some of the different aspects of what you do, think, you know, great, they have a building, pull up to the building, walk into the building. You know, the backpack service is really fantastic, you know, making sure the students are always supported the best way possible. But really the above and beyond of going out and delivering directly in communities and to individuals. You know, I think it really calls, you know, it calls a lot of attention to just the effort that's going, you know, going into this. And also the, you know, the sheer manpower work involved here. This is wild. You know, I know that you said you have 607 volunteers. I can only imagine the time that some of them are committing. You know, I know that this is, it's a constant process. You know, there's never really a day off. There's never a time when something doesn't have to be happening, you know, as you're pointing out, where you have food donations. Well, if they're, you know, if it's short shelf lives, great, you need to very quickly get things over, very quickly make sure everyone is able to access it. You know, those kind of things. I appreciate you drawing more and more attention to it. You know, and just remind folks that, you know, we are entering a time of the year where food scarcity is much more acute and people recognize it, especially around holidays such as, you know, the end of year holidays, Thanksgiving. You know, so being able to support, you know, however they can, is definitely going to be important. I know that you had said here, and for those of you who haven't seen this, I'm sure we can post this little image that we have. But it says 966 Thanksgiving and winter meal kits were provided last year, 60% growth over the previous year. Mm-hmm. So this is why I'm trying to highlight this for the community to understand that this is really, this is a time that's also seeing a lot of growth when you have a lot of these stresses, and also you get to the end of the year, and that's when a lot of people notice just how challenging things can be. So definitely make sure that, you know, we as a community finish strong. To that end, if people are looking to give in a way that is most impactful, obviously time is a great resource for y'all, but when it comes down to, you know, whether people bring by cans or food or cash donations, you know, is there really a preference for what you can do the most impact with? You know, I know that sometimes with cash you have the ability to stretch that farther than most of us.
Buying power.
Yes.
I mean, I love this question because there's just so many ways to participate and support your community through us. So in terms of funds, as Laura mentioned, people probably aren't aware, although there is some food that we do get for free, we purchase the majority of the food. But our purchasing power, because of our relationships with Greater Boston Food Bank and other places, does go further. So our dollar, we don't pay taxes because we're a 501c3, and we have access to heavily discounted product. So funds are always appreciated because then we can pivot. Sometimes we have to purchase our milk, sometimes we can get it at a discount, sometimes we can get it free, but we never know that till Monday morning. So every week is different, and it's not sort of like a restaurant where you're ordering the same food all the time and it's coming out onto the floor. It's always a moving target. So the flexibility of being a monthly donor or giving funds directly is helpful. But sometimes giving product is the best thing, and it can be, we have people who are moving, people who are downsizing, people who run fun drives or have a club or a book club. There's so many people in the neighborhoods gather together. So nothing is too small. The current needs list is on our website, so that sort of tells you real time, and we update that every week in terms of what our needs are. We also have an Amazon wish list. Those items, if you're particularly interested, most of those items kind of fuel the Weekend Backpack program. and you kind of click it and it gets shipped directly to us, so that's easy. But we just had a gentleman in a few weeks ago who works for a food distributor and is trying to build a relationship where we might be able to have what we would call sort of in-kind donations. The folks who plow and sand our property, they do that pro bono. We get a lot of work on the building pro bono. We have committees, a finance committee, a risk committee, an advancement committee, a governance committee, a lawyer who's looking to give back, give us a call. Like there really are so many ways that we would love to have conversations with people about whatever makes your heart sing. Come find us and we'll find a role for you. Yeah, money is great too.
Point taken. You know, I think you listed out so many different details and keep on going back to the website, so I want to make sure that people do understand and hear all these different ways to contribute in any way, you know, physically, with, you know, cans, with packages, with food, with cash, with your time, all of that. You have all the information on your website, so anyone who is looking to get involved, you know, it's just down the street. You know, when it comes to a kind of a home base, it's easy to find. But definitely take the time, and if you are able to contribute even a little bit, and I think it really goes a long way. I think that's the message being delivered here. When it comes to working with the schools, you know, I think it's fantastic to hear about a lot of different partnerships and how you're trying to really support the schools, and that we do have some opportunities that we're able to give back, you know, to y'all as well. Are there ways that we can work more closely with integrating our food services programs with the programs that you have, or different ways we can look into that? Because, you know, we do have an economy of scale. I understand your dollar goes a long way, but are there things that we can do that can help fill some of those gaps from time to time that we can potentially explore through our policy?
So I'll answer that, because Colin and Aaron are fabulous, and they are looking at ways to do that quite frequently. So I would say that those are things that are being explored.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And implemented. So.
No, that's fantastic. I think, you know, everyone else has done a great job of covering a lot of different bases. So I appreciate all the efforts, all the time, and the presentation. Again, encouraging folks to look into this more. You know, I think it is in some ways a simple way to have a very large impact in your community, a direct impact in your community and surrounding communities. You know, calling out again what you all said earlier. Not only are we helping to support a lot of people in town, but we're also supporting like five surrounding towns as well through the volunteer work and through the efforts of this organization. So, you know, really applaud you all and appreciate all that you do. Encourage folks to look into more about, you know, how we can help as a community support each other.
Thank you.
Mostly covered. I mean, just kind of going a little bit off what Paul said, though, the efforts to engage with the kids in the schools, I just so appreciate it. That's my little Sloan was in that Girl Scouts picture that you had up there.
Oh, kidding, really?
She had, yep. She's
up
by the logo.
Oh, by the logo with the blonde?
Redhead.
Yeah.
Okay. But she came away from that experience of going into the pantry just so excited. I mean, you have some future volunteers in that crew in that photo right there who came away from that experience with a new understanding and also a new comfort in the services that are offered to the pantry. So we appreciate you.
That's great.
Thank you for having us. Before we leave, I do want to just reiterate Laura's point that the volunteers, including our fabulous board of directors, but also the staff, work so hard and are so personally invested in what we do there that it's really what makes the engine run. So if it wasn't for all of them and the community that has enabled us to have a space where people can come, where we can do tours for people, where we can educate the community about what's out there, you know, we wouldn't exist. So it's really the community that has brought us here and will continue bringing us forward. So thank you all.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for all that you do and for coming out here tonight. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Discussion and action items. and discussion only items. Good on. Coming right into information matters. Pleasure.
Well, we heard earlier during the superintendent's report that Lucas and John and the whole team are starting to look towards the budget for next year. So that's the process underway. But other than that, we'll update it this time.
All right. How about policy?
I'm going to ask you a question. Have you heard anything about joint budget yet? Policy, yes. So we had our first meeting tonight, Dave's last meeting, Neil's. We went over the graduation requirements first week, so, and competency determination, which, you know, due to the MCAS vote in Massachusetts, we now are tasked and have a pretty firm deadline to kind of create these. So Tina's been working hard with her team to develop these. We got through the first reading today, and we'll probably have something to bring to you December, probably. So it's not really shaking much up. Franklin had pretty high, you know, standards anyway.
First read on October 28th.
Okay, so first read October 28th.
All right, community relations.
So from a community relations standpoint, we did have the last newsletter go out on Friday, October 3rd, one day later due to Yom Kippur. So we didn't do that on a normal Thursday cadence. We will have our last one for this school committee body going out on Thursday, October 30th. So we'll wrap up this month and just kind of remind folks about the upcoming election. Other than that, we're waiting until the next body comes in to see where we go from there.
Awesome. And with that, I love your suggestion to have like a food pantry, any like that, things to kind of highlight. Have we done that with like Safe Coalition or other ones? I know there's like...
Yeah, so there is a section in there for SafeCo, mm-hmm. But nothing in terms of advocating any community events.
Okay.
So that's something that could expand next year in terms of broadening the horizon around what's happening, what people should be aware of.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that was a great idea. So to keep that going, it would be fantastic. Awesome. Thank you very much. SWAC?
SWAC is a SWAC pretty bus.
And mental health?
No updates since last meeting.
Right? Yeah, the October 1st meeting. We are coming on October 1st and we are saying the tasks are under our agenda.
All right. Perfect. Consent agenda.
Good. I recommend approval of the minutes from September 30th, 2025, school committee meeting as detailed. I recommend acceptance of $800 from the Lincoln Street 3 through 5 PCC for field trips as detailed. I recommend approval of the student activity clubs accounts as detailed.
All right, is there a motion to approve the consent agenda as detailed?
Move to approve the consent agenda as detailed.
Second?
Second.
Discussion, questions? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, motion passes. Good to the order. First meeting of the new month, opportunity for the school committee, talk about ways in which I feel it could improve the board itself.
Yep, so I do have two. So one is regarding public comments, our citizens' comment. I know we moved it to the end. I think that was a really good move to ensure that folks are kind of sitting to the meeting just as long as the stuff that's happening versus joining and leaving. One thing I think we should revisit, though, is striking out the language that can't discuss something that was discussed in the meeting. I think now that it's after, it's a perfect opportunity for folks to take what they've heard, provide some of their immediate feedback and thoughts so that we can hear it versus just waiting for an email.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing. The second thing, I think we need to do a better job educating the public on a lot of things. So what I was thinking that we could do is have like a standing 15, 20 minutes just to talk about things that we should educate the public. So I know there's a lot of discussion out there right now around Chapter 70. So maybe like each school committee meeting, it's just a deep, like I was thinking district deep dive about a certain topic. So one month it's about Chapter 70, right? Next month it could be, what does the superintendent do? And it's like a, just a monthly or meeting series that we have, and everybody has something that we just educate the public around things that are important that they may not know. Because we hear admin is too top-heavy, which is, it's not the case. But people don't know what admin does. So I think if we show, hey, this is what they're doing, this is what's happening, and it's a lot of different topics. And I mean, we have what, we'll say 20 meetings a year. We have different 20 presentations, and we go through a year and maybe revisit them again and just kind of educate people, just so this is a continuous understanding of what's happening beyond what is it, our standing for the BAB comments. So,
with that one, hearing both of those, I know when it comes to first striking, I know I think when it was last brought up about citizens' comments, it was going to be added into the policy. I know there's a long roadmap, but we could definitely kind of bring that up to discuss that. That'd be fantastic. I love the education piece as well. You talking just before we're adding any more work to central office, more like for like the school, with like school committee members, we kind of go and pick a topic.
Yeah,
and present out ourselves.
I think it's a collaboration.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, I'm not sure how we would do it exactly, but yeah, it could be a collaboration.
Yeah, but so effectively, just to be able to have, so everybody kind of knows that this part of the agenda, there's going to be this, like how MASC does their learning lunch.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to have something that kind of says, this is kind of, you want to learn about, you know, FinCom has, what is it, like Bill's deep dive, build outs deep dive, mm-hmm. and we kind of have our deep dive on a certain piece of something.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it's a good time, especially with where we're at from the elections perspective. There are a lot of things that we do that other groups that have input, like the town councils, that may not be aware of, you know? So the more that they understand why things are happening, the better, the easier it is to say, oh, yeah, this makes sense to put our dollars there.
Yeah, and I mean, that's something we probably could work with Franklin TV, I'm assuming, where they might be able to also sniff that.
Mm-hmm.
And just so that
exactly.
way it's like, all right, you know, you don't want to watch the whole 3-hour meeting or, you know, less than an hour and a half right now. but here's the quick little
yeah, exactly.
thing about Chapter 70, about, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of misconceptions out there, and there's a lot of people that have their things have changed. And I mean, we hear all the time, declining enrollment, and your budget should go down. The cost from a special education standpoint has gone significantly up, but people don't know that. So if we had a special education segment, hey, this has gone up $1 billion more than it did 10 years ago. You know, I think it sells it easier for people, and people are like, okay, this makes sense, and this is why what is happening is happening.
That's great. Thank you.
Mental health and artificial intelligence are the urgent topic of the hour. Like our community, especially climbing, needs those kind of topics. So I want to give a big shout out for the Henry Louis Henson that we had a webinar with him a couple of days ago. And we will be having another artificial intelligence seminar with the Franklin TV on this month 20th at 6 p.m. So we're going to publish all those to the Franklin community.
All right.
I got something. I think that we need to be ready for when the new town council is elected. And maybe we can work on this like through you all. I think we should try to plan to get the new council in the buildings. I hear stories from a former FinCom chair who says that, you know, when Maureen was superintendent and Nutting, like when the new town council would get elected, she'd take them around on the little bus to like the schools and get them in the buildings and kind of give them like, you know, like a one pager of just kind of some efficiencies, some things that like we've done. I think now more than ever, on paper, that would look really impressive to a new school committee. I mean, a new town council, because I'm I'm just concerned a little bit about some of the interviews that I've listened to. I think that a lot of people are engaged right now in the community because of the building. And they weren't necessarily plugged into why these 2 years of budget overrides and discussions have happened. So if we end up with a town council that's got a lot of new members, which we will because there's a couple people already not running, then I think it's imperative that we get them up to speed pretty quickly, because I'm not sure how much they've been engaged in the past 2 years of budget problems. You know, so just something to think about. I have sort of a list that I can talk to Jana about like maybe what that one pager can kind of show, and I'm sure you do too. So.
Thank you. All right, citizens' comments.
Hello, everybody. I'm Henry Reese-Hinston, 2 Jaden Avenue. Good to see you all again. Mrs. O'Sullivan, I wanted to speak to actually what you just said, not intentionally, but I think it's a great idea to take the town and the town council around and see the schools, regardless of its composition. I personally seen and heard some falsehoods being stated about the schools committee, just things that I know is not true about our schools, about the committee here. So getting them involved, I think is a good idea, and making sure that they can see firsthand what the reality of our schooling situation is here. What I intended to come up here to bring to your attention, I've of course been talking to a lot of people in town. I'm hoping to join you up there in a few weeks. And something that a resident brought to my attention, which I will share, I may not have full information about, but I wanted to make sure you're aware of, is that right now our NEC NECC partner program exists in both elementary schools, with a portion of it being served to Washington Street and a portion being served to Lincoln Street. And I believe it's K-2 is happening in Washington and 3-5 at Lincoln, but I may not be correct about that. Okay, that is correct. So I'm bringing it up because my concern is that one of the really exciting positions that was part of the redistricting is to bring teaching teams together and giving that opportunity for cross for his collaboration and additional resources, keeping resources together. And that this structure seems to be that we're breaking apart a team that is relatively small and could really benefit from being in the same building together. The other concern that I had here was that these are students that are generally educated in a separate classroom but have opportunities for inclusion in other classrooms. At least that is my understanding of how the program works. And so for these students to build friendships and relationships with other students outside their primary classroom, and then be the only group of students to not go to the same upper elementary school, that's a pretty major disruption of those students' social circles. And these are students who very likely have difficulty building those social relationships to begin with by the structure of their education. There may be benefits that I'm not aware of to the way it's structured right now, but I just wanted to bring it up as there may be an opportunity to better serve both the staff and the students if we could bring both of those K-2 and 3-5 to the same site. All right, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve Sherlock, 13 Magnolia, Community Information Director for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio. Had two things, now I've got a third thing. Thanks to the food pantry for the reminder, since they didn't mention the turkey truck is coming up Thanksgiving morning. And I'll put a plug in too, because Jen and Aaron talked with me about a week or so ago. Time's kind of blended for the last couple of weeks. But the audio is now available. It was posted yesterday. It'll be on the radio, I believe, on Friday. So you'll be able to listen to the renewal of Turkey Trot and the Thanksgiving morning. And they've added a
costume award for the best costume for the day. So, quick one on that one. Secondly, one of the things we do is to try to amplify the public good. And while my radar tends to be good from time to time, I'm also finding the day of, there's a fundraiser from, whether it's a PCC or sports, et cetera, I'd like to get the word out to anybody that's doing fundraising for anybody's schools. Generally, that's something you've been planning for a while. Get it to me, get it to us, so that we can put it on the calendar. And I think I mentioned last year I was going to put a reminder, but clearly you had a bunch of things going at the beginning of the school year, but now that things are starting to roll, it'd be a good time to put that in. So the daily calendar also has a special piece for what's happening. So the ECDC enrollment piece is on the daily calendar every day this week per request, and that's a valid request. There's a fundraiser tomorrow, I believe it's the music boosters at Panera. But I've also been seeing some that's it's too late for me to put it out there. So just create the awareness. If you've got something coming and it's a fundraiser, let us know. And then finally, clearly with the election coming, there were 23 interviews, 14 days over the span of 21 days because of the time crunch. The videos and audios are available. So Franklin residents, please get informed, cast an informed vote on or before November 4th. Thank you.
Thank you, and a huge, huge thank you as well, just for putting all of that information together. It was well over 12 hours. It's longer than like some Stranger Things episodes. And so that's just a tremendous service to the entire town of Franklin. So thank you so much. All right. Anything, citizens' comments online as well? All right, I'm jumping on to new business.
Okay, for new business, next meeting, you can expect an update on the October 1st enrollment with our enrollment report where we lay out on where we're at as a district, and that's our formalized date through the state. We also will have a pledge due from school committee member's child. This is a unique one, a curveball, like that. And I'll also be sharing an update on my goals as superintendent that are linked to the district goals that you approved. So we will, you can expect to see more information on that at the next coming meeting.
Fantastic.
And this is a little off topic, but you, an update on enrollment, just because I know that part of the reason why we were told that this year that the budget for the town was short because it ended up being some more kids ended up enrolling in the charter school than had been anticipated. Do you know what is the mechanism for reporting the number of students to the charter school? How does that work in town?
I'm going to be sharing, I'll provide a presentation on that.
Okay.
Report, and I can explain some of the how the functions work and how reporting happens.
Okay, yeah.
That's my goal next meeting.
I've been asked that and I don't know the answer. So
no,
that's
okay.
Perfect.
It's a great question. And in the last, if you look at last year's, you'll see in my narratives where I provide some detail, but I think what we'll do is come back around and then provide just another overview and just provide that information just to set the baseline. And I think it's just good information to have on video, to have that document so you can look through and see, and we can look at the numbers. Some of it has to do with enrollment shifts, but also the cost of education has increased beyond the Franklin Public Schools as well. So there's a few drivers that play a role.
Okay, yeah, because the question I'm getting specifically is it us that got the number wrong, or you know, how did that number end up being inaccurate? And I don't even know that it's you guys.
Well, and the number on October 1st when you do enrollment, and the number by June 17th
can change.
It can change and does change and did change. So we'll walk through, like we did last year, we'll provide you with kind of a historical context and then just provide an update.
Thanks for that.
Yep.
At that last meeting, we were going to talk about these last meetings, new business was about the MASC resolutions. Is that going to be executed?
So we certainly can. There wasn't, at the last one, I had mentioned if you were interested in kind of being a delegate to kind of reach out. Hadn't been any interest. So we didn't have that as discussion action item. Mm-hmm. If folks are interested in that, we certainly can do that. We can submit that. There's one item on the resolution to remove, I guess, like an 1842 rule about a BMI screening. It's just kind of light on the things. But without interest for a delegate, we can have somebody and to kind of go on down to November 14th.
Thank you.
So, yep. All right. Then, otherwise, pursuant to Mass General Law, Chapter 30A, Section 21A3, to discuss strategy with respect to collective bargaining with the FEA, van drivers, cafeteria, ESP, LPN, and secretary units, as an open meeting may have a detrimental effect on the bargaining position of the school committee, and the chair so declares. Again, we will be adjourning to executive session and will not be returning to open meeting. Is there a motion to adjourn into executive session as discussed?
Motion to enter executive session as discussed.
Second?
Second.
Discussion questions? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, thank you all.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.